from Relay FM. This is Downstream, a podcast about the present and future of streaming media. This is episode number 73, recorded July the 11th, 2014. I am your master of ceremonies, Jason Snell, and with me once again, my guest, the West Coast editor for New York Magazine, Joseph Adalian, Joe, TV Mojo himself. How you doing?
I am doing well, Jason. It's good to be with you one more time.
Yeah, welcome back.
It's hot where I am.
It's actually hot where I am, which it isn't usually, but it is right now. I mean, not like your kind of hot. You're Las Vegas.
It's 116 right now. Yeah. So we're frying. Yeah. And yet today is cooler than yesterday, so we're sort of all excited that it's not going to be 120 degrees.
That's nice. My mom was in Phoenix. It's a very similar situation. It's the don't go outside kind.
Exactly. Although, oddly enough, this summer we've switched places with with Phoenix. Like, we're actually warmer than Phoenix, which never happens. They're always a little bit warmer,
can't live in these places.
It's insane.
Remain indoors. Anyway. Something exciting since the last time we talked, which was, by the way, last time we talked, it was literally I recorded in a friend's office because a big truck rolled by in front of my house and physically ripped the internet cable out of my house.
Oh.
So it's nice to talk to you in my house instead of in a friend's office at the last minute. So I'm a lot less discombobulated than I was for the last, for two episodes ago when we talked. But you, when we were talking, you had this thing coming out and it just started to come out. So we should plug it. A new podcast, a new season of Land of the Giants about Disney. I'll put a link in the show notes to it. But what is that going to be about?
Yeah, I'm excited to be a part of it. So Land of the Giants is something Vox Media Podcast has been doing for about 4 or 5 years now. They had a great season on Netflix back in 2020. For the first time, they're partnering with us at Vulture, since we're all part of the Vox family. And it's all about the Walt Disney Company. We're calling it The Disney Dilemma. I'm hosting 3 of the 6 episodes, and it really sort of takes a look at Disney, sort of starting around the Michael Eisner era through today, and sort of shapes how this company went from this sort of cultural icon to this mega corporation that has its giant mouse paws in all parts of our entertainment world. They're a lot bigger than they used to be. And they rode the wave of cable TV and the cable bundle to become a lot bigger as a company. They bought into the franchise business with Star Wars and Marvel, and now they're trying to become a tech company with streaming, which has proven to be a little difficult. So we're sort of tracing that, and I'm working with a great team there, and I've got some of my great colleagues from Vulture are going to be hosting some other episodes. New episodes drop every Wednesday, and give it a listen.
Cool. Awesome. I'm looking forward to listening. All right, let's move on to the news and the topics of interest. Big topic is something I remember, and I enjoyed talking to you about it because I remember I was feeling a lot of empathy for Sherry Redstone, who was, put in the position of having to essentially sell the family business and sort of didn't want to see it broken up and didn't want to see something bad happen to it. And it sounds like after calling off the deal with Larry Ellison's kid, David Ellison, they got back together. And the deal is basically done. And so Paramount and all of its parts is going to be sold by Sherry Redstone to a group that is led by David Ellison, but also involves Skydance, his studio, and Redbird Capital is investing as well. Sherry Redstone is going to get almost $2 billion for National Amusements, which is the holding company. Paramount shareholders are going to get a premium, which probably is going to reduce the number of shareholder lawsuits. That was one of the problems, right? Is theoretically, they could have just bought National Amusements and taken over Paramount without giving the Paramount shareholders a penny, which is not great. I would be mad if I were a Paramount shareholder, and that's the weird way the company was structured. So now it sounds like they've got this in place. And I think one of the big things, like Hollywood seems to love this, right? Because it's this scion of a tech company billionaire, but he's been playing around in Hollywood for years now, and it means that there's no consolidation, because although Skydance will presumably be consolidated with Paramount, it doesn't mean like 5 major studios become 4 major studios as a contraction kind of thing. David Ellison has said, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. The kid wants to be in Hollywood, and Hollywood loves being loved. So I guess obviously a lot still to play here, but it's interesting to see the tech money come in and enable the purchase of Paramount. And I do wonder, I don't know if you've got any thoughts about what this means for the future of Paramount, but it can't hurt to have a deep-pocketed owner who doesn't want to fold it into another company somewhere.
Well, at least not now.
Not yet.
Until you know, it's profitable. They have the capital through his dad, Larry Ellison, a big supporter of Donald Trump, who now, of course, will have control of CBS News when this all goes through. So that'll be interesting to watch. Isn't a lot being made of that, but it certainly gives me a pause. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing this whole drama play out over the last few months, I sort of wanted, imagining Sherry Redstone at one point saying, just when I thought I was out, they pulled me back in. I just have to do a Godfather 3 reference because it's Paramount. Don't know if it even fits, honestly, Jason.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah.
Con! I don't know. I'll throw in some snakes. Why does it have to be snakes? We can put them all in there.
Exactly. You know, I'll be honest with you. I actually, because I've been working on the Disney podcast, I haven't even covered this deal. This is the first time I've actually, you know, I haven't written about it since it happened. And I've not given as much thought as I might have. And I will, because I also think there's time. I want to actually make sure it closes.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that there's not something, there's a 45-day window, a little bit less now, where supposedly someone else could swoop in. Is that going to happen? I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me at this point.
It feels like another shield against lawsuits, but I guess that's the idea, is if somebody actually wants to make a legitimate counter, they can, but otherwise they can also say, look, this is provably the best offer. I mean, Larry Ellison's putting in $6 billion. So let's be clear here. This is dad coming in to help his son fulfill his dream of running a movie studio, and good for him. Larry Ellison is one of the richest people on the planet. I always think of him as like Steve Jobs' confidant too, which is kind of weird, but like that was a long time ago now. And so he's doing that. I saw one, Puck had a very funny thing that I thought was an interesting, again, you're sort of doing some analysis. This was Bill Cohen, about the people involved, who said basically like Sumner Redstone didn't want Sherry to be involved. He tried to get her not be involved, but she insisted. And the way it was phrased by Bill Cohen that I thought was really funny was, it's a story of two families, one dad who supports his children and the other one who doesn't. Like Sumner Redstone was like, whatever, Sherry, I don't want you in here. Whereas Larry Ellison is like, sure, David, you can have $6 billion of my hundreds of billions of dollars for your little movie studio. And then Redbird Capital is also throwing in a couple billion. I also think it's interesting the recycling of executives. Like Jeff Shell was a very major player at NBC and was relieved of duties after
He had a long time affair with an employee.
Who reported.
And then allegedly, and never. Yeah, then apparently her career didn't advance. And who knows? It was icky and it was wrong. And it really is weird how, you know, the Me Too movement just clearly it's a short life. Not saying there should be a death penalty, obviously, but
he's gone through the wash and is going to be the president of the new Paramount. So that, I guess, and Jeff Zucker. Unkillable Jeff Zucker may also be involved. Although when they asked the people at Redbird Capital about Jeff Zucker's involvement, they were like, you know, he works for us. And it was very much like, well, that's it. Like, maybe not. Maybe are they fighting over Jeff Zucker? I don't know. But anyway, Jeff Zucker might be involved. And there's some other people who are kind of like getting recycled. Jeff Shell was generally very highly thought of until he had those issues. So, you know, but I get the sense that if they want him, they want their buddy. So they want to bring him back.
And I guess that's fine. But I will also tell you, you know, is Peacock and NBC, are they necessarily models for how you want to get into the streaming world? And I am someone who is unabashedly a Peacock fan. I think there's a good thing there, but it certainly didn't launch that way. His strategy was all over the map. I don't think it was particularly great. And so look, I'm not a big necessarily like sold on Team Jeff times two as the future of entertainment. I sort of have grown sort of to think that, you know, I think the bigger problem is that Paramount has been just so rudderless for so long with so no real strategy. It got into the streaming arms race late, and then sort of after the ship had sailed in terms of going all in on streaming, you know, they waited too long, and then when they got in, they sort of did it half-heartedly. And it's a shame though, because there are some great assets there. CBS is a great asset mm-hmm. that deserves to have good management. I think the current management at CBS is doing a great job, and I think they've managed this transition well, but they're hampered by the fact that, you know, they're just there to cut to reduce the debt and to spend less. And it's a shame, because, you know, we talk about the cable bundle and linear sort of fading. Well, CBS is positioned to be one of the last networks to fade around. They've got an audience there. They've got something that works. They've got Pluto, which is a great asset that's been, yeah. you know, was sort of sacrificed for building up Paramount Plus, when in fact their strength all along was linear and free television, and some combination of investing more in CBS, investing more in Pluto. You know, Pluto should be where Tubi is now. Pluto should be the one with all the buzz, not Tubi. And it's just been a mess, and it's sad. Is it possible that this will be better? Yes, because I think the last couple of years have been chaos. And it's really been a shame, because there are a lot of smart people who don't have support from their management teams, and people who know content well. You know, I'm not convinced bringing Jeff Shell or Jeff Zucker into the mix is going to help with the content of it all. The tech side, they've also talked about really yes. making more of a tech play and investing and changing things. Stuff is above my pay grade, probably more in your pay grade. And maybe it'll work. And if they've got the money, the resources, absolutely. One of the big advantages Netflix has, and you know, I was talking to my colleague on this Disney podcast about this afternoon, you know, Disney has had to become a tech company, and that's hard, right? They had to buy BAM Tech, and they're still not really where they need to be in terms of an algorithm. Netflix works so well because it's at its heart a tech company, and had to learn the entertainment business, and that's a lot easier. Getting the right people to make content, and it's just a matter of hiring good producers, hiring the right executives, giving them money, letting them run free, and that's what they did. Building a tech company costs more money and is more difficult. It takes more time, and no one in the legacy media space has really done that right. So can Larry Ellison come in and do that? And can he team up with an NBC Universal and a Peacock or someone else to get some scale in terms of leverage? Well, okay, well, if they can do that, then I'm a lot more intrigued. And so my whole thought of this is I'm reserving judgment. I do not know what to expect. I don't think it's a slam dunk. I don't think that Sony buying this would have necessarily been awful either. I think there are a lot of smart people at Sony mm-hmm. who could have found a great way to monetize the Paramount library and sort of supersize things. I don't think you can stop consolidation. Unfortunately, there's going to be more of it in the next 5 years. It's just a matter of who. But let's see what happens.
Yeah, in terms of the tech thing, I'll take whatever my pay grade is. I'll throw out here what I've thrown out in previous episodes of this podcast and many other podcasts I've been on, which is, you know, first off, I don't know. I mean, they did a bunch of slides that talked about like cloud and AI and stuff like that. It's like, you know, I don't know. That's business speak. I think that that you can discard that as being, you know, almost just meaningless. But I will say, one, you mentioned Netflix, and this is exactly right. Netflix is at its heart a tech company that also does content. And the problem with all the old media companies is they are so focused on the business of doing content. And when you go direct to consumer, which is how it's always phrased, the idea that you are now giving Disney your money for Disney Plus, right? That is, it's direct. It is their product. And Disney's got at least some experience with that through the parks. But like, this is like the parks. Your app is like a Disney park. Your app actually is the place where your customers live. And it is stunning that in 2024, so many streaming apps feel like afterthoughts, that they focus, yep. they spend so much money on their shows and on their marketing. And then the app, which is incredibly important, as Netflix has shown us, in terms of their algorithm, in terms of, you know, exposing extras, in terms of reducing churn and keeping people in your app everything. To watch the next thing. All of it comes down to software, essentially. And so if the group that is using Larry Ellison's Oracle money comes in and says, we think, and they have said this, we think we can do much better on the technical side, and that they view that as one of the places where Paramount and CBS are really lagging, is on the technical aspect of this. I think they're right. I mean, I think there are very capable people. It's what you said. There are a lot of people who know, and they don't get listened to. And I think ultimately that's the problem in a lot of these old media companies is their tech people know exactly what's going on. But the chain of command is an old school media company and they don't get it. So if the new guys come in and they get it, maybe they've got a chance to fix their tech side.
Or they get it, but because they've been so focused on Wall Street valuations in the short term of it all, right, they don't see the ability to spend the money needed, because it costs a lot of money to do these things. Engineers are, as you know, are very expensive.
Oh, totally.
And Netflix has made them very expensive. And by the way, just being a tech company, unfortunately, doesn't guarantee you're going to get the tech right. Exhibit A is the Prime Video app, which after a redesign,
Apple TV still sucks. Is similarly like that. They're not paying enough attention. But I would argue there, Amazon and Apple are companies that while they're doing these video streaming things, it's not their focus either, right? Because they have other businesses.
Yep.
But if you're Paramount, like, oh my God, Paramount Plus app is your number one focus, right?
Right. And by the way, one thing, you've got to make it right. Exactly. And someone at Paramount Global, let's just say someone at CBS, I'll get more specific, told me a couple years ago, they said, we're spending all this money on Paramount Plus, we're doing all this, we should just strike a deal with Netflix, giving them all of our content, and they give us a certain amount of money. And you know what? It would have probably made sense for both of them, because if you think of Netflix as the world's best cable company, the world's best distributor of content, what better? You know, CBS doesn't have local. It has some of its local stations, yes, but it sold its cable networks and distributed to cable platforms like, you know, Comcast did the distribution. Everyone else, so they organized the channel guides and made sure you had DVRs and everything. They focused on that, right? CBS focused on the content. You know, the same thing here, like, get the distribution, get a deal so that they can focus on, you know, what they do best. Instead, everyone tried to go direct to consumer, which was very understandable on one level. But unless you have the money, you're just going to waste it because you're not going to be able to get the sort of scale you need. And that's what's happened. And I still, you know, if Netflix weren't so stubborn, they might have actually considered it too, because, you know, having that output deal, a lot of those CBS shows do very well on Netflix. So they could have been away. And CBS is brilliant at advertising too. Imagine if you suddenly had the CBS advertising experience selling Netflix advertising and it was all bundled together. It would make a lot of sense. There were some ways where, yeah, legacy network doesn't make sense for Netflix to sort of own it and run it all. But if you separate out the companies and just sort of have it, you know, worked out. And then, of course, you need to get, you know, the networks and the legacy companies to work out the relationship with their affiliates so that there's less sort of, you know, complaining about what's exclusive and what's not. But I'm getting distracted. I think if Larry Ellison, sorry, David Ellison and his team can sort of solve the tech of this new company, then that'll be a good thing. And you know, there's plenty of great content inside this company that can be, you know, made attractive, especially if it gets combined with one or two other legacy companies.
And I think they'll lose some of the fears about like cutting costs to pay off debt, and they will be a little more emboldened. And I think that's probably good. They have been running scared for the last couple of years because the value of Paramount has been going down lower and lower and lower. And are they going to sell, and what's going to happen? And it's been kind of an all hands on deck. And this will be different because it'll be new owners wanting to put their own stamp on it. But I feel like they've got an opportunity to reset and do some interesting things. They will also probably move forward with selling off some assets. BET sounds like the one that's the kind of, there are buyers for that, and that'll get them $1 billion right there, probably something like that. And that's good for them. It sounds like the trio of CEOs at CBS are sort of on board, already know sort of what the new owners are going to want, and that they can move ahead with those. You know, when they're in alignment, they can move ahead with those things, and the new owners will give their nodding approval. And they say that they're not going to have to wait for like all of the deal to close in a year or something for them to still be kind of like putting their plan into place, which is good because time is of the essence. Also out there, possibility that there might be that, like what we talked about a month ago, which is, you know, a streamer team up. Would it make sense for them to pool their resources with a Peacock or a Max or even something like Amazon? I think that's
Jeff Schell knows the people at Peacock, whether they want to like him more or less, who knows, but you know, maybe he's been a sleeper agent.
And, yeah. Who knows? Who knows? And I know that David Zaslav is sniffing around saying, you know, anybody want to do a streaming service with me? So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. Although I did see some analysts suggest one of the ways that they can cut some costs at CBS, and this is just the state of network TV right now. CBS is so good at it, and they have done so well, but we're living in a world where this fall ABC is going to have 5 scripted primetime shows, and CBS is going to have 16. So there is one question, which is there's room for CBS to dial back on the amount of scripted that they order.
But that would be a tragic mistake because the fact is the CBS, that scripted pipeline, it's stupid to think of these shows as CBS shows. Yes, they start on CBS, but then they get monetized on PBS or on PBS.
On Paramount Plus.
On Paramount Plus.
For sure.
And they can, so you need that content. And ABC is honestly, the reason ABC is cut back is because Disney is already making so many other shows with Marvel and Disney, and it's short term. And I actually think it's a mistake a little bit for ABC too, but they do have Hulu making, look, Hulu has a Ryan Murphy show that in another day and era would have been just an ABC show, but they've also got a Ryan Murphy show on ABC as well. Right. So it's both, but you know, you have to get the balance right.
I would also agree about not only is CBS so strong and their scripted is so strong, and then it all goes to Paramount Plus. And then also if they're the studio that's producing it, it's in the library. It can go out to Netflix later for more money, but something that Julia and I kept talking about, and it remains the case, which is sitcoms do incredibly well. Network sitcoms do incredibly well on streaming. They are super bingeable. Everybody loves them. Netflix customers love them. Everybody loves them. And nobody develops sitcoms like network TV, especially at volume. And CBS has been the leader there for years. So you're also cutting yourself off if you cut back on scripted from one of your great sources of an entire genre of TV, which is the comedy. And we think, well, comedies are they hot anymore? And like, well, new comedies on streaming aren't hot, but old network comedies on streaming are huge. They're still huge. So
by the way, some news network sitcoms are doing very well on streaming.
Yes.
Ghost does very well on Paramount Plus. Abbott Elementary does very well on Hulu.
Totally.
You're right. It's not like it used to be. And NBC hasn't cracked that nut. Their sort of sitcom hasn't sort of taken off because they don't have the right platform for it. But CBS has a lot of multi-cameras that still do well, and that, you know, we'll probably see The Neighborhood on Netflix in a couple of years. And everyone will wake up one day and say, what, the number two show on Netflix this week is The Neighborhood with Cedric the Entertainer? And I was like, what was that show about? It's like, well, it's been on CBS every Monday, you know? Well, so it's absolutely about, and maybe we're going to get back to a world where there are windows and streaming does become a window. And again, that gets back to my idea of using Netflix as a platform if you have an output deal with Netflix, you know, it's what, by the way, that's how the CW lasted as long as it did as a real network, was because it had a deal with Netflix where they just sort of paid for its development. To me, I think Netflix should, instead of spending all the money it is now on making its own shows, it should be looking and investing in some of those network shows. But we'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. It also sounds like there's a possibility that they will focus their domestic streaming here in the U.S. and then be a little bit more of a content arms dealer internationally. I always thought that was because I'm a real believer. I actually think Les Moonves is, I mentioned this last episode, I think his move with CBS All Access was actually pretty decently timed, and he was getting international distribution from places like Netflix and Amazon to pay for the production of his expensive Star Trek shows and all of that. It was kind of brilliant. It was the, no, we're going to make Paramount Plus a thing worldwide, where it kind of fell apart. And it sounds like that's one of the thoughts that they've got here, is they've already got some partners. I think that Sky Showtime is the partner that they've got in a lot of European markets, where they're partnering with NBC Universal on that. So there are places for them to just sort of step back and say, you know, we don't need to create a worldwide global dominant streamer because it's not going to happen, and then focus on the US market and then partners overseas. Makes sense to me, I think.
I generally agree with that. I think there are certain players where it still does make sense to be international. I think Disney has capability to be international. Warner Brothers Discovery, we'll see if they get big enough. I still think they could, though it depends. I do think that would make a lot of sense. And that's, you know, the problem with CBS All Access was that they put it behind a paywall when it really should have been, from the beginning, it should have been a free platform.
Yeah.
It should have been the way to get people who are watching CBS to watch it digitally. But of course, Les didn't want to give up even a dollar of those cable subscriptions, but you know, there are ways around it. Fox has sort of effectively done that. They sort of put all the Fox content on a week later, so you still allow for affiliates to have a little window of exclusivity. But and the problem that's even with CBS All Access is they spend a lot of money on shows that, you know, didn't have enough of a base of subscribers. So you were making shows like The Good Fight, and but you didn't have enough people to pay for it.
Right.
But anyway, yeah. But yeah. I stand 100% with your point.
A good show that should just have been on CBS. So yeah, exactly.
And realizing, but everyone was trying, in their defense, everyone was trying to see where the network audiences was going. And the fact is, younger viewers were fleeing first, and it was hard because you see these numbers like, oh, this is a horrible number, but now those numbers look great.
Yeah.
And it was just a matter of sort of like accepting it and thinking long term. But again, everyone thinks quarter to quarter in this industry, and that's what hurts them. And why did Netflix succeed so well early on? Because they were not thinking quarter to quarter for their first 10 years. They were just bleeding money, mm-hmm. and they were just building up, and they had that runway to sort of become what they were because they weren't thinking quarter to quarter.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with Paramount, but I they do have some deep pockets, and
yeah.
maybe some of that, taking some of that quarter to quarter pressure off and trying to fulfill their new owner's vision will give them a little runway to do some better things. We'll keep
Indeed.
An eye. We'll keep an eye on all of that. All right. We touched on this a little briefly in our last segment, which is when you talked about Pluto and Tubi and Fast TV, free ad supported, and should Les Moonves' vision of CBS All Access have been, look, it's CBS, but you can stream it and it's free, but it has ads in it. And there is a question that I've been reading in the context of the topic that we're going to talk about now, which is, are we, in the end, are we just going to end up in a on-demand version of the world that we grew up in, which is ads with ads and shows with weekly releases? And the reason I bring this up is, the eternal question on this podcast and many others, which is the great debate, to binge, drop, or timed release your TV series. And this has come up in a few ways. We got a letter from listener Joe, not co-host Joe, but listener Joe. And please, you can send us emails, or actually it's an email. Go to, downstreamfeedback.com, and you can give us your feedback, and we'd love to hear from you. Love to your mothers. This is listener Joe, who said, Time Bandits is going to drop 2 per week on Apple TV Plus. What's the strategy? I assumed it would drop all at once, which Apple hasn't tried yet, but it's once every 2 weeks. And my answer is, they're experimenting. You know, Apple does seem to have a standard model, which is you drop 2 or 3 episodes and then you drop weekly. But I think they've done some kids shows where they dropped all at once. And I think mm-hmm. they've tried with comedy. I'm not 100% on this because I was trying to think of what comedy it was. But I think they've tried some 2 a week. I know that definitely, like, Max has done that with Hacks. I've seen that with Hulu as well. The idea of taking a shorter run, you know, a 30-minute essentially show and dropping a couple at a time instead of one at a time.
Smaller streamers like BritBox do that, and right. Acorn, they will sometimes do 2 episodes a week as well.
Right. But I think it's all part of the experiment, which is like, what's the best way to get, because the reason that we debate binge or not binge is both of them have their merits. And so the experimenting is like, well, can we give them 3 at once so they get into it? But then we need to come having, we want to have them come back weekly because you don't want churn. And the argument with The Bear is a great example of this. The Bear on Hulu, great show, has always dropped all at once. And season 3, the question was, are they going to do it all at once again? And they did. And the advantage is, for 1 week, everybody's talking about The Bear. The disadvantage is, if there's a particular episode of The Bear, and this happened with season 2, where there were 3 very particular amazing episodes of The Bear, it was all just kind of lost in the wash, and maybe it came back later. And the stats show that it makes it easier for you to turn on Hulu, watch The Bear, and then turn it back off. Whereas if they stretch those out weekly, you're kind of like hanging around Hulu longer. But on the binge side, the idea is, if you put a lot of show up at once, you're really making an appointment to open that app while you're binging that show, and maybe it's training you into being attached to Hulu or whoever. I can see, you know, obviously Julia came down on the side of, it makes sense for some shows and not for others. And it's like, it's that simple. And I think there may be some truth in that. But
well,
Joe, what do you think?
You know, I think it also depends about what platform you are. You know, Netflix is able to do that because they have so much content. They spend so right. much, and they have an international, you know, content and reality and everything else, that it's okay if they sort of if they sort of compete every week, sort of opening box office weekend, and every week we're going to have a new release. And that's sort of what they do. They still have issues of people opening the app, but not as much as others, where if you're other platforms, you don't have that advantage. And the thing with the episodic releases, though, yes, you technically can potentially get some people tuning in every week. What's more likely is you're either going to get some people to sample and then forget about it because they're not, it's, you know, streaming, unfortunately, because we haven't yet duplicated the linear experience of flipping through channels, and everyone doesn't always have that great Apple TV device interface to keep track of all your releases. A lot more people are on, I mean, Apple TV is a small device, yes, compared to Roku and Prime, which totally do not make it easy to keep track. Technically, Roku does, but it's hard to find anyway. Won't get into the weeds there. You know, there's no sort of lean back. People forget. My mom, again, she is 77, so it's a little tough. She's fading memory sometimes. She tries to keep up, but like, she can't remember, wait, did I watch that show? So when is it? We've also, streaming got rid of time slots. Max, by the way, with HBO, has made it easy because everyone thinks Sunday night. They know, right, Game of Thrones. They know it's there, so it works. And some of their other shows too, True Detective, whatever, they're still, even though most people are not watching on linear, right? And yet people still think of it, and they use that marketing.
Yeah.
It is, to me, you know, insane that streamers have not figured out scheduling and time slots, that they've, right, not finished a way to, you know, if you're going to have some comedies, release 4 comedies at once and have, you know, a block of them come out every Thursday night.
Oh, man.
And every week. And you, yeah, might even call,
Peacock,
it must-stream TV.
Yeah, maybe, yeah, Peacock, exactly, could do that and do it on Thursday nights. And, let's imagine. And just,
right. Or have daily programs like soap operas or game shows that get people opening the app. But then again, you also have to solve for the problem of the way we people have been trained to stream. It's, and Netflix wants to be, because Netflix knows if they get you in there and there's always something, then you're not going to go, people don't want to keep opening apps and remembering apps and what did I watch and where's this app and is this a new episode? So when you do a weekly release, it becomes harder to keep track. Whereas if it's binge, oh, I've heard about this show. I saw so-and-so on Kelly and her husband or The Tonight Show or whatever I'm watching, if I'm still watching linear TV, or I saw social media on it. I can go, I can check it out. I see the buzz and I watch it and I remember to come back. Whereas if it's every week, you say, oh, was there a new episode this week? Or then you forget, you know, so it's, or people just wait until it's all done and then they watch it that way if they don't care, because most people are not following the discourse on social media. Right. They're not on Twitter like media people sort of trying to figure out what's what. So, you know, I am a fan of weekly releases. I believe in slow binging older TV shows. I am someone who watches, you know, I went through watching every episode of Mary Tyler Moore Show and Bob Newhart Show, watching one episode every week on Hulu until Hulu took Bob Newhart off. That's another thing. It left Mary on anyway. But every Saturday night, like they used to air in the 70s when I was too young to watch, you know, I like that and I advocate for it. And I'm, but to do that, you need to have a lot of shows. You need to have schedules. You need to have time slots. You know, you need to have a lean back experience. The fact that, you know, if I were running Netflix, I would have 8 or 9 Netflix channels that were running all the time,
oh, yeah,
linear, where I would premiere my episodes. I would premiere of certain shows. Most shows, if a show where I agree with Julia, where it depends upon it, there are shows that are made for, you know, sort of cinematic, and you could argue that it makes sense to watch it all at once. And, you know, there are a lot of Netflix shows have sort of like breaks designed to get you to just tune to the next one. Maybe it doesn't make sense. It's more cinematic. It really is a 5-hour movie, you know. But if a show is really a TV show, if it is episodic, if there are natural act breaks, all that stuff, then yeah, then it does make sense to do episodic. But you got to make it easier for people to remember to tune in and to recreate that experience, and or figure out the problem of, you know, what Apple does well, which is letting people keep track. Maybe there needs to be some sort of universal standard. I don't know what that is. That's why it'd be better if there really were, if Netflix would just rent out its space as a cable company. And, sure, you know, you can add on, hey, I've got Netflix with Max. Like, which, by the way, speaks to what you were talking about earlier about devolving back to the future of where TV used to be. You know, we always had, in the cable era at least, we had sort of premium add-ons. So maybe for some people, there are some channels you pay $10 a month for, or $20 a month for, and they're your basic and there are a lot of ads. But if you want a premium experience, then you upgrade to HBO or you upgrade to Paramount Plus or,
right,
or something where the premium stuff is. Or if you want sports, you have a little a la carte and you get Venue that you add on to it. So there are ways. I hope that we're going to see a lot more innovation and sort of tearing down walls to sort of get to the place where you know, maybe there are some new people who end up as distributors. Of course, this could make Netflix even more powerful, which I don't know if anybody wants to do, because who trusts them? But anyway.
Yeah, well, I do wonder if it ends up being that there are two or three players that are playing that game, and everybody else has to go to them, and we're rebuilding. Then we really are potentially rebuilding a cable bundle by having those gatekeepers in charge. But the one that I keep coming back to, and I know you're right, we can overdo it talking about like the discourse on social media and things like that, but I do feel like one of the ways you generate buzz and word of mouth about a TV show is about an episode. And the problem with dropping a whole season is you don't even know. I mean, you can't talk to people about it. You can't. You literally can't, because you don't know who's seen episode one, like The Bear season three. I am one of those people who heard people talking about The Bear, and I watched season one and then loved it, and then watched season two and really loved it. Season three comes out, and where am I in The Bear? I think I've seen 4 of the episodes because we're slow binging it. I'm not going to blow. I know that once it's gone, it's not coming back for a year. So we're going to watch one every maybe couple of days. And we just started because we were watching some other stuff, and then it'll be gone. But when season two happened, you know, there's the episode with Cousin where he kind of turns his life around. And there's the episode with the family dinner, Fishes, the Forks and Fishes. And then there's the episode where, was it Marcus? The baker goes.
I've never seen The Bear, so don't give it all away.
Okay. Well, I mean, all I'm saying is, like, there are these three episodes, the Copenhagen episode, the episode with the family dinner, and the episode with Cousin having an experience at a restaurant and kind of understanding a little more about what hospitality is about and maybe changing his life in the process. 3 of the whatever 8 episodes of that season, they're distinct and focused entirely on this one. They're like classic TV. You can actually say the episode where this happens, where, you know, a lot of modern streaming TV is a smear of story, and you can't say that. It just ends and then you go on to the next one, or you don't. And the tragedy, I think, of taking a show like The Bear and making it a binge drop is that you probably could have gotten a lot of people talking about what happened in that episode that was so interesting. And instead, I feel like we all waited a few months and then we're finally able to talk about it a little bit after the fact, once everybody had caught up. And I just think it's a shame. I know that I'm basically describing like a water cooler conversation. Like, there's something to that. I think that is a success of something like House of the Dragon, which is not as enormous a hit as I'm sure they would have wanted it to be. But the advantage of it dropping on Sundays on HBO is, if you want to talk about Game of Thrones with your friends, you're all on the same page, because that episode drops on Sunday night and then everybody can talk about it on Monday. And I think there's power there that Netflix can afford to scoff at, but I'm not sure any other streamer can afford to do.
Right. Well, and I think Netflix is wrong to scoff at it, too. I think that there are some shows that would absolutely lend themselves to being weekly releases, and they've tried with some of the reality shows, but even that's feels a little bit weird because there's not enough heft, of a number of shows. And you still have to remember, I think younger people in their 20s would listen to this conversation. What are you talking about?
Because Bridgerton got cut in two by Netflix, right?
Well, exactly. That is a bridge too far. Exactly. So there is, and that's why I think you need to know the show, and I think you need to experiment. And I think Netflix can, if it wants to make shows that feel like linear shows, then damn it, make them feel like linear shows, keep them lower budget and release them weekly. And, at some point, I still think Netflix should do a free tear or something close to it, or some sort of fast. But and I think Amazon, by the way, has also proven that they know how to sort of adjust a little bit better than Netflix. You know, they've launched some big sort of shows like The Boys, for example, was launched as a binge, but then they switched it up to weekly because they realized, look, we made the cultural impact. People found it as a binge. Now let's spread it out. And then I think they did that with one of their other shows. And there is something to that. Sometimes with newer shows on smaller platforms, releasing season one as a binge is a good way to ensure that people have the show, they finish the show, they fall in love with the show.
Right.
And I think that case, you're balancing whatever possibility of people discovering it that we create. Like, by the way, some of the same critics who complain about it, they get, and I get them too, they get screeners all at once. And what do? They binge those damn things.
Always.
Right? I, by the way, usually don't, sometimes because I don't like seeing my name sprawled across their little digital watermarks. But also, I like the experience. Like, I had, the first four episodes of House of the Dragon. I didn't watch because it's like, no, I like my Sunday nights with this show.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's fine. And so, it's to me, I'm in favor of being a little agnostic. Again, I'm probably closer to what Julia's point of view was. But I also feel like you need to design the show for the right audience and match it.
Right. I think that's a fair point. If you've got an audience that expects the binge drop, then maybe you give them the binge drop. Also, another point that I think Julia made that I think is a really good one is when you do a binge drop, you're kind of marketing it like you're marketing a movie. It's
movie.
A huge amount of marketing for an event. And there is something to be said for if you're going to do that amount of marketing, make it all available. Because if you really pump somebody up into watching this thing, they can watch as much of it as they want, as fast as they want. And you give them the ability to do that. And I get that. I think that there is an argument to be made there. And if you're Netflix, as much as it bugs me, I will say Netflix has so much content too that Netflix can't, your 8-episode series, Netflix can't market your 8-episode series eight weeks in a row. They're on to the next thing. So
which is why they need to design some linear schedules, but also Netflix shows also feel a little bit more like movies, and they are sort of split up, and they're sort of the single plot line. And for that, but then there are other shows like That 90s Shows should in theory be a weekly release with a couple other comedies. And every week there's the Netflix Friday Night Comedy Drop or whatever it is, and get people coming back all the time.
Yeah.
And it's sort of default programming, and there's no expectations, just because huge numbers. And because the numbers for That 90s Show or 70s, 90s Show, whatever network they're in now, as far as I can tell, they're actually not that good. And I think it's because, you know, it's a show that needs more time to build. And I think people, anyway,
I love your idea for bringing back essentially must-see TV, because this is how we get a weekly release and a bingeable thing, right? Is you weekly release four sitcoms and you can binge those four sitcoms and then come back next Friday and binge the next four episodes of those four sitcoms. It's like,
or I would have Shonda Rhimes to produce three shows that air and they come up on Thursday nights, and those air up quickly, and then it's sort of like her old, like, and I'm glad Shonda's on to her other thing and she's got her shows. But you know, Shonda knows how to make a great episodic television show. She knows how she made Grey's Anatomy. So And look, by the way, Max and Netflix are both working on shows that feel episodic and that are sort of old school network. John Wells is doing a medical drama for Max. And then there's, I don't know if it's David E. Kelley or someone else is doing sort of a crime show or a legal show or something that sort of feels like that. So why not have those come out weekly? Mm-hmm. And why not do a couple more? And it would make a lot of sense.
And then
you're going to do network shows, take lessons from network TV.
There is no one size fits all, but there are certain kinds of things for which it makes much more sense than other things. All right. Well, I think we're going to wrap it there because you are a very busy fellow. I am going to be doing some travel, but I'm hoping I will have an episode in 2 weeks with a special guest where we're going to do, I'm not going to do Sports Corner in this episode, but we're going to do, I think, all Sports Corner in our next episode. So if you've got questions, for our, all Sports Corner episode, especially downstreamfeedback.com, we love hearing from you. And if you haven't yet, please consider subscribing to Downstream Plus. This is a full-sized episode for everyone, but every other episode is half-sized for free, and the Downstream Plus subscribers get the full-sized episode. Go to downstream.plus to subscribe and support the show. You can find me at sixcolors.com, and I appear on other podcasts at Relay FM and theincomparable.com. Joe Adalian, where can people find you? In addition to Land of the Giants, the Disney Dilemma, is it Vulture? It's all Vulture all the time?
I hang out at Vulture.com all the time. That is my employer. You might see some stories on New York Magazine. And of course, on social media, I'm at TVMOJOE on both Blue Sky and the cursed site that I still call Twitter.
Yes, indeed. Exactly right. Yes, TV Mojo. Don't miss it. His feed is great.
If you want Mojo. Oh, God, that's horrible.
Oh, no. Mojo.
yes.
And that brings us to the end. Joe, thank you so much. Hope we can talk again soon.
Love it. Anytime. I have a blast being here. Thank you, sir.
Bye, everybody.